From Cortland, New York, America's smallest small city, it's the Nerd Bomber Podcast, featuring the best news, entertainment, and related discussion that pop culture has to offer. And now, your hosts and experts in anti-social media, Just Jamie and your friend Claude! Ladies, gentlemen, millennials, welcome to the Nerd Bomber Podcast. I'm your friend Claude, here as always with...
Just Jamie.
And today we'll be cutting right to the chase so we can discuss our most memorable media mascots. Primarily from the world of television advertising, I would say.
All of mine are definitely from television commercials.
Yeah, mine too. Obviously advertising always leaks over into print media and radio. However, it's the classic TV commercials that you need to really drive it home.
Absolutely.
Well, I think I went first last time, so how's about you start us off?
All right, so when I was first started thinking about this topic, a lot of stuff automatically pops into your head because there have been just infinite numbers of... It's a lot of breakfast cereal mascots to start with.
Right.
So a lot of those crossed my mind, of course, but I tried to dig a little bit deeper, and so the first one that I came up with was really these characters, plural, became known for more than what they started as. But they started in 1986 in commercials for Sunmade on behalf of the California Raisin Advisory Board, and they are the California Raisins.
From the California vineyards. Don't you know I heard it through the grapevine? Sounds great, doesn't it?
Haha. Yeah, I almost picked them, actually. Glad I didn't.
So maybe it's a little bit of a cheat because I do remember them being in these commercials, but of course they became well known for being regulars in holiday special programming. They had their own TV specials. I don't know if they were all holiday based. They ended up having a life of their own as characters. I'm surprised they never had like a feature-length movie. Maybe they did a TV-based one. I'm not really 100% sure. But as mascots, they were definitely effective because they really ended up being bigger than the thing that they started in support of, which is kind of a somewhat unique circumstance, I think, for most of these characters. Most of these characters, mascots, spokespeople, I don't know that a lot of them ever really... growing beyond the bounds of the thing that they were originally created to promote. But the California Raisins definitely did.
Yeah, I don't remember hearing much of anybody's, you know, raisin purchases, you know, boxes of raisins or anything like that going through the roof because of the California Raisins. But everybody remembers the commercials. And the main special that I think you alluded to that I remember was called Will Vinton's Claymation Christmas. And they were the centerpiece in that.
Yes.
And it was a bunch of other characters. But I think they had other ones too. But yeah, they were everywhere. I'm actually sitting next to about a 2-inch toy version of one right now.
Yeah. I think, were there McDonald's toys? There must have been.
I'm not sure if they were in Happy Meals, but they definitely sold them kind of like the Smurfs figures. They were at like gift shops and that company,
right,
Applause,
right,
made them. So they were just kind of little plastic statue things everywhere.
Yeah. So that makes sense. I mean, because I remember, I don't own any. I don't have any. I know that you do. I've seen it myself. But I know I've had my hands on them too. And not just the one that you have sitting next to you now. I've had my hands on them at some point in my life. So I probably own them. It's hard to remember, but it's hard to forget sort of what they look like, what they sound like. Very memorable.
Yeah. It's so weird that such an odd little character became such a lasting, you know, I guess cultural icon, you could say.
I think so. I think they qualify for that that label.
Oh, and just off the top of my head, there was also some kind of little wind-up version of them. I had that when I was a kid, too.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. Wind-up toys. There's a lost...
Yeah.
I don't want to say they don't exist, because I've definitely seen new wind-up toys, but they were a centerpiece of most merchandising plans, I feel like.
Absolutely. Yeah, I couldn't think of the last one I saw. At any rate, my first pick just so happens to also be claymation. However, mine is for a different type of food. I went with the Noid from Domino's Pizza.
Avoid the Noid with the Domino's Pizza Guarantee. We guarantee your pizza will be delivered within 30 minutes or you get $3 off your order. Guaranteed. And we guarantee your pizza will taste great. If you're not satisfied with your pizza, we'll replace it or refund your money. Only our pizza is guaranteed to avoid the Noid. Domino's Pizza delivers. Call now.
Yes, I considered it.
We each picked one of them, so here they are.
The double whammy.
I think it's fair to say that, for a time anyway, the 80s were somewhat dominated by claymation.
Yeah, it's interesting to think that there was so much of it at that time. It exploded in the 80s.
Yeah, and it all seemed to pretty much come out of the same place, Will Vinton Studios. He kind of had the market cornered to the point where everybody came to him for claymation.
Yeah, no, I think you're totally right. I think the Will Vinton stuff did have a certain flowy nature to it.
Almost liquid.
Very fluid. Yeah, liquid. I remember just the facial expressions, the way the lips would move. You know, I'm thinking back to the California Raisins, of course, but it goes beyond that, the Noid. Just a very, very elegant style of animation, which I also imagine was costly and time-consuming.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Had to take forever. The Noid specifically was a humanoid man in a red costume with rabbit ears.
That's what I want to. That's who I want selling me pizza.
Yeah. according to the literature available on the Noid, he was intended to be the quote physical manifestation of all the challenges inherent in getting a pizza delivered in 30 minutes or less. And basically, that's what the commercials would be. Yeah, I know. You know, try and try as he might to steal the pizza for himself, he always was unsuccessful. Tons of different commercials came out with him, and I don't know, especially if you're a kid, they're insanely fun. Ironically enough, at no point in the 80s did I ever have any Domino's pizza.
Oh, man. We didn't really have one in our area.
Right.
I think I had Domino's pizza at a birthday party. I remember not liking it, and that painted my opinion of Domino's for two decades, probably.
Right.
That they do not make good pizza. I later had my mind changed, but for some reason at that given day, I did not like it, and that was all I needed to know.
Well, that's weird because, you know, like I said, I grew up without ever having had any of it, despite seeing the Noid commercials and loving them. But I was under the impression that it was, you know, kind of cheap, gross pizza, too.
Yeah, I don't think there's anything wrong with... I mean, I think it is cheap pizza. It's not the... I don't know. Gross is too strong. I totally had a different relationship with Domino's later in my life because I worked with a guy. We would work nights, and we would each basically get a full medium pizza to ourselves and basically race each other to who could eat the whole thing first. So... that's not making any kind of argument that it was healthy in any way.
No.
Not gross. But it changed my relationship with Domino's, which is at this point non-existent because I never choose to go there.
Well, it's Domino's themselves had to, around 2010 or 11, had this big PR campaign about how they had to overhaul everything and make everything better. And now it's tastier and you give it a try. And I just remember that being like a big deal. So maybe that came as part of the perception that we're describing early on.
Maybe, yeah. That's kind of a strange thing that they've managed to stay in business despite the constant battle against a bad reputation.
As for the Noid himself, there was also a really cool game, video game for the original Nintendo. It was called Yo Noid. You know, and it was, I'm seeing this through my memories from 20 plus years ago. So, you know, maybe it's not so cool, but I just remember thinking it was fun. And,
of course,
you know, it's obviously just a thin, you know, advertising tie-in, but you know, most of our childhood characters were.
It's hard to escape that.
I guess there was even going to be an animated series for Saturday mornings until it was canceled because of the complaints about that exact issue, that people said it was merely an advertising ploy and shouldn't be directed at children, et cetera, et cetera.
Wow. I mean, so many other franchises managed to get around that one way or the other. Basically every childhood franchise was a ploy to, you watch the cartoon, you buy the toy, you buy the comic, you buy the cereal, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
That's what every major franchise at that time was. So it's a little bit surprising to me that they didn't have the savvy to get around those kind of challenges as so many other IPs did.
Right. I also found out, just to wrap up the Noid, that apparently what caused the character to be discontinued was a man who was mentally ill, whose name was Kenneth Lamar Noid, considered the mascot a personal attack on himself. And he went into a Domino's with a gun and held employees hostage and, you know, basically accused the company of stealing his name and, you know, forced them to call like the corporate headquarters and demand $100,000.
Wowza.
I
did not know that. That story took a turn.
Yeah. He was in there for so long that he demanded special pizzas be made for him. And while he ate those pizzas, he was distracted and the hostages were able to escape. And then, of course, police kind of took over and charged him with all kinds of crimes. And it's not officially acknowledged, but the timing seems to point to this incident causing the discontinuation of the Noid.
Yeah, I mean, that just seems like it's bad press all around. You're just kind of going to be like, we're just going to back away slowly from that one.
Right. So, yeah, I didn't realize that either, but I still think it's awesome. Sorry, Ken. All right, back to you.
All right, my next one definitely crosses over the line between mascot and spokesperson. But it was just unavoidable. This was actually the first thing that came to my mind when we started talking about this topic, and that is John Machida for Micro Machines.
I'm the Micro Machine Man, and I'm waiting to be launched out of the cannon. But first, let me tell you about another launcher, the Micro Machine's Power Launcher. With super storage for two unbelievably ultra-fast Micro Machines, simply strap it to your wrist, roll up the roadway ramp, pull back the power loader, then let her rip. The totally terrific Micro Machine's Power Launcher, the only way to launch a totally terrific ultra-fast Micro Machines from Galoob. And remember, if it doesn't say Micro Machines, it's not the real thing.
Oh. Oh.
Yeah. So John Machida at one point was the world record holder for world's fastest talker. And he started doing the Micro Machines commercials in the 80s. And he did a lot of other advertising campaigns for FedEx, Tiger Games, different broadcast networks. He was even the voice of the Transformer character Blur, who was a fast car, believe it or not. Definitely, he became most known for and definitely came into my consciousness as the guy from the Micro Machines commercials. The tagline was, if it doesn't say Micro Machines, it's not the real thing.
Right.
And that is burned into my memory.
I think I just quoted that maybe two or three nights ago, just out of the blue. So yeah, I'm right there with you.
There's a weird random one that's also in my head for some reason. It wasn't like a main tagline or anything, but it must have been for some sort of a play set. Not a car or anything, but a given play set. And I just remember it was something, something, something. Fold it up, take it away. They also stick with me.
Yeah, I mean, they had like an airport at one point and like a parking garage and things like that. So it could have been any of those things. But yeah, absolutely.
Oh, yeah, all the standard issue stuff.
Yeah, that's a heavy hitter pick. That guy was everywhere for a while.
Oh, yeah. He's still around, too.
Oh, yeah? Still just as deadly on the mic, is he?
Well, I haven't heard him, you know, really push the limits. I'm not really totally sure about that. But I'm pretty confident that he could probably pull off more than what most people can.
Right.
The Micro Machines were a big deal. People kind of don't realize it now because they burn bright and fast.
Right.
But there was quite a while there where they were outselling Hot Wheels and Matchbox cars by a fairly good margin.
Yeah, and I'd imagine they were Gloob's most successful product.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. And they didn't have a bad run, probably a decade or more, but it, you know, Hot Wheels, Matchbox has been around for 50, 60 years, so it's hard to compete with that.
Right.
So that's about all I got for John Machida, so I guess you're up with your second pick.
All right, well, I'm going with that Moon Man from McDonald's who makes everything right when you turn out the lights. I'm talking about the infamous Mac Tonight.
When the clock strikes half past six, babe, time to head for Golden Lights. It's a good time for a great taste dinner at McDonald's. It's Mac Tonight. Come on, make it Mac Tonight.
Wow, yeah, mm-hmm.
This is not quite an anthropomorphic character. It's the moon with the body of a man who wears sunglasses and sings basically a Bobby Darin ripoff, which I believe...
A strange choice.
Yeah, well, I believe that similarity to Bobby Darin is what ended up getting Mac Tonight discontinued because they sued...
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the character was discontinued for almost 20 years. But, you know, for a kid, again, it's a moon that sings, and they spent a lot of money on these commercials. At least it looked like it. They built elaborate sets, and like he's basically on a piano floating down from the sky, and you know, all the trappings of a McDonald's musical number in the sky.
I mean, just, you know, the physical appliances of the mask / headwear to make the moon was it's really something. It was hard to even explain. People kind of just have to like get on Google and look at it themselves.
Yeah. Yeah. These are, I mean, it's all practical effects.
Of course.
Man in a suit type of thing. And that man in this case was none other than Doug Jones.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, exactly. Anytime you need a skinny guy in a crazy costume, he's your man. He played him for 11 years, from 86 to 97.
Wow. I did not realize that it went so long. I did not. If you would have asked me when that campaign ended, I would not have guessed anywhere near 97.
Yeah, I don't... I mean, I agree. I don't think it was full steam ahead for that whole time. I think the usage of him got more sporadic, but yeah, that's a pretty good run for an advertising mascot.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive.
And it got so popular for a while that a lot of McDonald's installed like an animatronic version of him in their stores.
Going full Chuck E. Cheese.
Right. Yeah. I mean, basically it was kind of their, I don't know if they were ever trying to, like, you know, fully make a run at competing with Chuck E. Cheese, but it had the effect when you walked in as a kid and you see this, you know, like this, it's not a puppet, it's just like this robot that's, you know, the guy from TV, and you're like, whoa. I think there's still one somewhere in the country that still has an animatronic Mac Tonight.
Road trip.
Oh, there it is. Woodbridge, Virginia, apparently.
It's not even that far.
Not really.
It's about 6 hours for us. We could do it.
I know the very first thing I'm doing once the global pandemic subsides.
Going to get a picture with Mac Tonight.
You know it. yeah, so that's my number two. Back to you.
All right, so my third one is not so different from Mac Tonight, as a matter of fact.
Oh.
It consists of a man in some pretty heavy prosthetics. And that would be Max Headroom.
Where'd you get that thing? Hold it. Ready?
Blast off. Enter. Get up. And this is Max Headroom. Hi. Ah, a new cocologist. Welcome.
He can see us.
Where there's a wave, there's a coke.
It's okay.
Okay. It's great. More people prefer the new refreshing taste of coke over Pepsi. It's true.
What are you watching?
An educational program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Catch the wave. Coke.
Oh. Wow. Yeah. We were just kind of eerily in sync with these.
Yeah, yeah. So Max Headroom has a very weird, strange history. In addition to being a spokesperson on TV, in this case for the 86-87 advertising campaign for New Coke.
Right.
The tagline was "Catch the wave," spoken in his weird computer voice. He also had his own TV show that aired sporadically here and became really popular over in England. The weird thing about Max Headroom was, and he was also parts of some other advertising campaigns. I'm choosing New Coke as my example. The weird thing about Max Headroom was he was kind of a little bit of kayfabe.
Right.
So Max Headroom was played by actor Matt Frewer. Again, like I said, was wearing, you know, makeup, prosthetics, had like a fiberglass. It looked like he was wearing like a plastic suit and tie, and they would shoot him from, you know, the shoulders up so you couldn't see the bottom of it because it wasn't a full suit. And then they would really, really crank up the exposure on the film. They would run sort of computer graphical backgrounds. And they went kayfabe. They wanted people to think that they had created this character in rendering software and that Max Headroom was a computer-generated animation. And really, it was just footage of Matt Frewer in costume doing the stuff. And even he, as the actor, kind of like had to keep it quiet. And no computer would have been capable of pulling this off at that time. It would be unthinkable. Because the animations, I shouldn't call them animations. The way he acted the part was not that limited. I mean, he would pretty much make faces and do what he wanted. And then every once in a while, they'd put in a little, you know, they would kind of jump cut the animation to make it look jumpy, I guess. And they would make him stutter his lines as if he's, you know, it used to be a joke. I don't know if anybody is even aware of it anymore. I would kind of do that all the time, just kind of messing around, messing around like that.
Right.
And I don't know if anybody's even really aware of that, if there's any legacy for this character left over at this point. But yeah, that's kind of the more interesting thing than the fact that he did this weird advertising campaign for this weird product, New Coke, was that they went kayfabe and wanted the world to think that he was really a computer-generated character.
Well, I was a child at the time, and I absolutely bought into it. I don't know. I don't have a sense of how adults reacted to it, but I think it was easy to do. I think they made it obscure enough to where you would probably be like, I don't know, is it a computer?
Right. Well, I think there wasn't a lot of sort of common awareness of what computers could do and couldn't do in the right hands.
Right.
You know, those computers that they have can do it. You know, we can't. Hardly any households had computers in 86, 87. That was a rare thing. So I think there was a little bit of unawareness as to what they could pull off and what was possible and what wasn't possible. And in terms of adults buying into it or not, you know, it was probably a little bit pro wrestling-y.
Right.
You know, I've used the kayfabe thing where it's like they kind of like probably had maybe a notion that something was up, but there was no proof. And it's not like you couldn't search for it on the internet.
Exactly. Yeah. You couldn't debunk it in 5 seconds.
So there was this weird computer animated character. I don't know if that's made with computers. And then that was pretty much the end of the conversation because there was nobody there to debate it with. So.
Right. Well, I mean, similar to the California Raisins, this is probably the other main advertising mascot that absolutely transcended its product.
Oh, absolutely. Like I said, he ended up on his own TV shows.
Right. And I think there's a lot to be said for Matt Frewer essentially being Jim Carrey before Jim Carrey.
Man, that's a good point. Because if you were going to cast Max Headroom now, Jim Carrey might be high on the list.
Right. It's weird. If you go back and look at his stuff, like, you know, even in these commercials, you can see like almost the same exact mannerisms and you know, physical style and even the tone of voice. It's weird once you like look at it through that prism, I guess.
100%.
There was one other thing that Max Headroom sort of became infamous for, even though it has nothing to do with the actual official version. I don't know if you came across this or if you're aware of this.
Lay it on me.
I think in the Chicago area, in the late 80s at some point, there was like a hacker who broke into the cable signal. Yeah.
Yep.
Wearing like a Max Headroom mask. And I think he did it twice, like interrupted the signal and said a bunch of weird stuff that they can't quite make out a lot of, and made references to some, I don't know, like political thing or whatever. And to this day, nobody knows. They haven't been able to figure out who was behind it.
Yeah, I did come across that, and you're right. Like, still nobody knows who he did. I don't even know that there's a lot of theories out there. Nobody's kind of falsely claimed it at this point. Whoever it was is either dead or really, really committed to the secret.
Right.
yeah, they kind of wore like a cheap Max Headroom, just pullover Halloween mask type of thing with some weird backgrounds behind them and interrupted the TV signal for like, well, I don't even know if it was a full minute, but.
Yeah, just very short.
It's actually kind of a cool, creepy thing.
It is, yeah. It's very, I mean, it's, I mean, basically it's on its face. It's very harmless and silly, but when you like watch it, it is unsettling for some reason.
It is, yeah. And I'm sure the experience of seeing it like that was very unsettling, kind of like, what was that?
Right.
And again, you're talking the 80s or 90s. When did this happen? I forget the time frame.
I think this happened in the late 80s.
Okay, so again, there's no internet to like look up. What was that? What just happened? There's nothing. You experience it. The moment's passed. And you never get to experience it again.
Right. Yeah, you have to you spend your whole life wondering like, oh, did I make that up? Or
yeah. So all of a sudden in the late, 2010, this thing called YouTube is created and somebody somewhere happened to be copying that telecast on VHS and happened to capture that moment and upload it to YouTube to remind everybody, hey, remember this weird thing that happened?
Right. Yep, it was real.
Yeah, you didn't imagine it or remember it wrong. I think that's all I got for Max Headroom. I guess we're on to your last pick. All
right. I am going to bring it on home with one that you mentioned earlier, and it is a heavy hitter, but it rounds out my personal big three from childhood. It's one of the commercials that when they came on, I would actually be interested in watching it. And this is for Kool-Aid, of course, starring the Kool-Aid man himself.
All right.
I don't
still
even,
very much around.
Yeah, I can't even really begin to guess how many commercials there were, but it seemed like they were pumping them out on an almost weekly basis for a while there because there was like just constantly a new flavor being introduced. As a kid, I just thought it was so awesome when the Kool-Aid man would come bursting through the wall and pushing his latest toxic colored drink onto me. I remember being like, Mom, can we get Purple Source Rex?
I never once called any Kool-Aid flavor by its flavor name.
I just thought they were, they made them so absurdly fun that I wanted to say the name.
I could say Purple Source. Well, I have to say, I don't think I grew up ever actually drinking Kool-Aid.
Oh, no.
Well, I mean, I drank sugary drink packet things mixed into water, but it wasn't Kool-Aid brand. That's what, you know what I'm saying?
You were a Flavor-Aid family.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so were we.
We were going generic.
Right. Well, I think it was pretty much only if there was one of those crazy novelty flavors that we would beg for that we would get the real stuff. You know, there'd be, you know, Purplesaurus Rex or Sharkleberry Finn. the stupid Halloween one was always great. Great commercials and, you know, fun package art.
Of course.
But yeah, Kool-Aid Man, for anybody who's not familiar, is a pitcher of Kool-Aid with legs and arms and a face. And approximately the personality of Macho Man Randy Savage.
He's a combination of Macho Man Randy Savage and the Shockmaster, if you want to go obscure.
Whoa.
The way he breaks. Yeah, well, you know, because of the breaking through wall thing.
Absolutely. Wow, I never even considered that. That's actually pretty brilliant. So he borrowed from wrestling, and then wrestling borrowed from him.
I guess so.
You know, again, he maybe not in a quite as like ubiquitous way. Kool-Aid Man also transcended the product. There were a couple of video games in the early 80s on Atari and television made starring Kool-Aid Man, and he got his own spin-off comic series in the mid-80s. Then another five-issue run in the late 80s. So two different comic book series, two different video games. Yeah, it's pretty
good. I got to look up the comics because I want to see Kool-Aid Man have a conversation.
Yeah, something that has to go beyond, oh, yeah.
Right, Kool-Aid Man, what do we do? I don't know, Jimmy. We've got to talk about it. Like,
here, just keep drinking this. And he like leans his head. And
the answer is always drink more Kool-Aid.
Right. yeah, I think that rounds out my my top three picks.
All right, yeah. And I've done my top three. I did want to throw a shout out to a couple of modern advertising campaigns. One of them started kind of lame, but has ventured into a weird with an extended cast of characters, and that's the Progressive commercials with Flo.
All right, of course.
Flo started off as just kind of a very basic character, just like, I'm Flo and I know a lot about insurance. But then all of a sudden they started having these, you know, the clumps situations where she goes to see her family and it's all the same actress playing her dad and her sister and her mom and her brother. And then they have like, they have other cast members. This one named, this other guy named Jamie who goes on these wild adventures but doesn't think they're exciting because they don't have to do with insurance. There's one where they go, her and this other coworker go on a speed dating adventure. They've gotten very strange over the years, which I appreciate more just, it's been so successful that they didn't have to stick with just selling insurance. And the other one that I wanted to mention is the Sonic guys. TJ Jack Gadowski and Peter Groh have been playing the Sonic guys for Sonic Drive-In since 2002. And those would be like the only commercials where if it's on, if they're on, I will rewind it to watch the commercial because I find them to be hilarious. Shout out to the Sonic guys.
They are, yeah, they're kind of the most prolific right now, I would say.
Oh, they've done hundreds and hundreds of commercials. It's been a really long run, so it's pretty impressive and unbelievable. And I hope they're okay with being forever known as the Sonic guys.
Yeah, they'll just go cry.
It's made them both millionaires.
Yeah, they'll wipe their tears on stacks of cash, I guess. And that'll bring this episode of the Nerd Bomber Podcast to a close. I have been your friend Claude.
And I've been just Jamie.
And we will see you next time.
Later.
Chicago television station. Someone using sophisticated equipment managed to briefly and illegally override broadcast signals on WGN-TV and WTTW. Jack Connolly reports now that both incidents are under investigation.
Even in a medium that is no stranger to bizarre moments, these were truly bizarre. Starting first on WGN-TV at 9:14 Sunday night during a sportscast.
12 quarters finally did.
Take some pretty sophisticated microwave equipment operating in the broadcast auxiliary frequency bands and a significant amount of power.
About 2 hours later, the video pirate struck again. This time, the target was a science fiction broadcast on PBS affiliate WTTW. And this time, it wasn't 25 seconds long. It ran for almost a minute and a half. By this time, the pirate had managed to insert audio as well, along with a display of a marital aid and a portion of his or her anatomy. It generated hundreds of calls.
The Nerd Bomber Podcast is a Ghost Factory Internet production brought to you by the WHAM Network.